recommendations, but they'll go on the mayor's report instead, so.
All right, sounds good. Call this meeting to order. Do we have any public comments? No one in the room, no one online?
No.
You want to start with item number 7, with the cloud?
Yes, please.
All right, let's go. ADM 2025-41, resolution approving an agreement with Clarity Cloud USA, Inc.
Okay, staff, as you know, we've been working on paper for the last 15 years, at least I've been here, and I'm sure, you know, prior to that. So we had a lot of disjointed operations on how we do workflow in the department, keeping track of things. Inspections are done with paper notices. They get wet, they fly away. So we have been looking for the last 2 years for a product that would provide us with workflow digitally that we can track. It goes along with our main focus of the department is to be paperless. So we looked at about 6 or 7 programs over the last, platforms rather, over the last 2 years. And we've landed on Clarity because Clarity not only was in the right price range, a lot of these products range between $35,000 and $50,000 just to start up, and then with the annual fee of $25,000. We felt that Clarity coming in at $45,000 to start up and $26,000 annually, locking us in for 3 years, most of the other contracts are between 12 months and 24 months, was a good fit for us. As well, Clarity's parent company, Camino, they have been well known to do large-scale ERP systems for large communities. City of Los Angeles is one of their clients. This is one of their scaled-down platforms for mid-sized communities like ours. We did like the interface also with the public. It's very, you know, user-friendly, and it's intuitive, so it asks you questions. I don't know if you ever do your taxes through TurboTax. It asks you questions and leads you to the next item. This is how it flows for this side for the residents. And then internally, we can make comments on applications. We cannot allow applications to move forward unless it has the specific information that we require, so it's not a lot of ended or dead-ended applications that we do have on file internally. So we reached out to a lot of communities that were similar in size that have been using Clarity product, and we provided that feedback. It's all been positive. Clarity itself says that it's expected to take about 8 to 12 months for the ramp up to launch. All the processes will be managed in-house by Clarity. They will do staff training, all the forms they will create, so it's not a big heavy lift for city staff. We just have a couple of meetings a week until we get to until that final product. So we are recommending to move forward with Clarity. We did not go out for bid. As I mentioned, we looked at other communities' product platforms, rather, so this would require supermajority vote from city council.
On budget, we do have money in for an ERP system, obviously, which we have not moved forward with. This would actually likely lessen the need for the ERP system, at least as far as it relates to community development modules. We still need it for utility billing and finance functions. We'll move forward with that independently. So as far as I know, we will not need a budget amendment in order to approve this for this year.
Yeah, that's correct.
Is there any concern about the any transition period, I guess, for onboarding with this program?
So we won't know until we start, but I don't believe so. And this product will integrate with our GIS, and it does have capabilities. MSI will still be our finance product, but it has capabilities for us to dump that information into MSI without having to be redundancy, like we are doing now with several different programs. So we're kind of confident that, you know, it should not be a hard transition to that platform.
You would run the paper process until
correct
the online process.
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
So if
for some reason you didn't like it, but you're tied into it for 3 years, right?
No. Yes, 36 months.
Yeah, we've demoed it, watched videos on it, talked to other people. So, you know, we think that the process has been pretty well vetted in that regard. You know, there's always going to be intricacies when you get into a new system, but the meat of it should be multiple times better than the paper process we have right now. Somebody calls and is like, hey, did I pay the permit fee or how much do I owe? Like, that requires somebody to go pull a paper file and then answer that question on the phone. Whereas, there's no inquiry you can do online, so, or in an electronic system. So.
Correct.
Matt, Chris, you have any questions on this?
No, I'm good.
Does this limit us when we go for an ERP program? I know you talked about it, you know, comes from a company that does do ERPs. Does it have limitations for compatibility with other companies if we didn't go with, you know, the parent company?
So, no, because this product is all GIS or PIN number based. So as long as there is a platform that is compatible, and they have been known to integrate with Tyler products, other large ERP systems, so it should not. It would just be a plug and play, kind of just, you know, get the data. They can run, is it CSV reports and, you know, SQL-based. So there's no coding on our end, you know, a staff to change all of this. If we want to change a form, where other, you know, products would require coding. So no, it should not be a hard implementation to run with any new ERP system we have.
Rob, you had checked on that too with our preferred ERP system.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yeah.
Yep.
And then, you know, you mentioned it finance-wise, we are just reallocating funds from the existing ERP line item for this. And that would, is this then funded out of the operations for community development building permits? Is that how we're going to be paying for the ongoing maintenance fees?
The ERP allocation is currently in the admin services fund, so that's where the initial expenditure would go, and then we have you know, rolling planned funding for an ERP system. My guess is we probably would then house this in community development going forward. So,
and when it comes to the applications and, you know, permits, this is everything. It's community development applications, building permits, every type of application that would come under community development, correct?
Every application, and some engineering and public works.
Okay, that's good that there's even more than that. Mm-hmm. So that, and My concern is always that it's user-friendly and easy for the general public, for, you know, fences, pools, decks, all that kind of stuff, that it's intuitive. I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but I'm trusting staff that you guys are made that assessment that it is easy for the public.
It is, and it's very slick-looking, which is also impressive as well.
Now, is it just web-based, or is there an app-based
So it is web-based, it's a portal, but I believe we can get an app because our inspectors are going to be using it as well to upload their inspection results, so they'll be using a tablet, but I'll confirm that with Clarity if it's an app or if it's just all web portal-based.
Yeah, the back-end part of it, the software, is entirely cloud-based.
Yep.
And do we need hardware for inspectors or others to have in order to be in the field if they're doing inspections? Do we need tablets, computers, laptops that we don't have currently?
So we have tablets, they're just not in use, but we can upgrade those and get them to work. But you can also use it on your phone, and we all have smartphones too.
Okay, I just want to make sure if there's other costs that we're going to need to be incurring to implement it in the field, that we have that.
Yeah, we'll think that through.
Matt, do you have anything to add?
Nope, I'm good.
All right.
Okay, so we'll put this on the mayor's report then for the next meeting and talk about it there.
Sure.
Okay.
All right, and then you want to to do the community solar next, right?
Yes, please.
All right, ADM 2025-45, resolution approving community solar participation.
All right, we've got Ernie Schrammel from Progressive Business Solutions here. He's passing out some forms now, positioning himself so he can be better seen.
I'm not sure how this, your video system works here. I see different people on the video.
Yeah. It's the little owl there right there. So it's fun. And it's got a mind of its own. So it's even better.
So it'll track people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's your voice. You can keep walking around the room and laugh, and it'll follow you. So.
Okay. I was just curious over there because I saw it kind of, and I was like, is somebody controlling that thing?
Yep.
Did everybody get a copy?
Here, Marla.
So while he's handing those out, the shortest story on this is that we're asking for authorization for me to be able to enter into a community solar participation agreement, and Arnie will get into the details of how it works. And it is going to require us to actually find a solar farm to enroll in. So there isn't one to say, hey, you know, we're going to go join this solar farm and lower our prices. It'll have to be something that you authorize me to do, and then when there's one available, we'll enroll. So, Arnie, if you want to get into the details of how it works.
Yeah, I first, and then probably people on the video won't see this. But,
that's good.
But I first wanted, this is actually my bill, and I've started trying to first explain it this way. So I'm enrolled in a community solar, my own house. And the program basically is I get allocated, let's say, 10 panels at a community solar field. In my case, it's up in McHenry. So whatever production comes off that field, it goes on my bill. I pay for that production at 90% of whatever the ComEd rate is. So if the ComEd rate goes up, I pay more. If the ComEd rate goes down, I pay less. But then I get a full credit at whatever the ComEd price is, and there's always a 10% difference. So if you look at this bill, you know, for this time period from May 12th to June 11th, the panels dedicated in that field produced 585 kilowatt hours. And they gave me a credit of 6175, and they charged me 5558. Basically a 10% reduction. And it's all on the same bill, so it's not like I'm writing a check for $55.58 and they're writing me a check back for $61.75. And it's really that simple. And now let's get into what is community solar. So community solar was first passed in 2016, and then revised significantly in 2021 with the Clean Energy Jobs Act. So, and this is all part of this Clean Energy Jobs Act, was to get us 50% renewals by 2030 and 100% renewals by 2050. And we're all paying in. If you look at the ComEd bill, you can see a line item called Renewable Portfolio Standards. So everybody who pays a ComEd bill is paying into this fund. But the legislators understood that not everybody can put solar on their buildings or their land, because we tell people if you don't have a roof good for at least 20 years, you shouldn't put solar on it. There's incentive money to put solar on your roof, but there's no money to take the solar system off your roof, fix or repair your roof, and then put the solar system back on. So this program was developed in Illinois by the legislators, and I think Yorkville, you guys have actually approved a couple special use permits for, is it two fields?
I think three or four.
Which are generally 10 to 20 acre fields. They're community solar fields. They're built by the developers. They right now got a 30% tax credit as a big incentive, and about another 30% of it's paid through the Illinois Power Authority. But all those funds come from everybody who pays. Now, kind of the handshake deal the Illinois Power Authority has, if you take our rebate money, our incentive money, you have to give the end customers a discount. And it's generally around 10%. So the other thing that the state of Illinois put in, and they learned this from Minnesota, so Minnesota did these community solar fields a couple years ahead of Illinois, and then they build these fields, and then 100% of the subscription was taken by big companies, and like the University of Minnesota, 3M. And the residents were like, that doesn't seem fair, because we're all paying in, and all the community solar offtake is taken by big government agencies or big companies. And I tell people, if you're a community solar developer, I'd rather deal with one University of Minnesota than 2,000 residential homes. So I get what they're doing. But in Illinois, they basically put a 50% line and said, you can have half your production go to big companies or government agencies. The other half has to go to residential. So what we've seen in Illinois is similar. The large, and Yorkville would be considered a large customer, the large subscriptions go real fast. Because, again, a solar developer would like the city of Yorkville because they can use a lot of kilowatt hours on a customer that's got high credit ratings, and guess what? It's probably going to be around for the next 20 years. And then it takes them a lot more time to get the residential customers hooked up. It's much more time intensive. So we were working with your staff here, and we had a company, US Solar, lined up, but then they sold out of production. So what we're recommending to the city council to do, because again, the large governmental industrial subscriptions go fast, is to give the village administrator authority to enter in a contract, you know, pending legal approval, once a new community solar field comes online. And I think what Bart suggests, and you could also make it a condition of a future special use permit, if there's more community solar developers that come to the city of Yorkville. Now, I know this sounds too good to be true, but it's really, you don't have to do any capital investment. You can get out down the road if you want. It's really just filling out some paperwork, and you save 10% on your money. It's almost like clicking the standard deduction on your tax return. You don't have to take the standard deduction, but if you say you are, you know, your tax bill will be lower. The other thing that changed 2 years ago, prior to 2 years ago, you had to get your electric supply from ComEd. Well, the city's been getting the electric supply from a deregulated supplier for, I think, since 2010. It's been at least 15 years. And again, the reason why is generally the city's getting at least 20% better pricing with a deregulated supplier than ComEd. So that's why we never did these programs in the past, because why would you take 10% savings when you're already at 20? But now you can double dip. You can get a 20% reduction by being with an electric supplier, plus you can get the additional 10% through a community solar developer. And that high level, did they get your memo?
We did, yeah.
Yeah. You should hire Rob as our, he explained it very well in his memo here, very, very well. But I wanted to open it up for questions. Again, in some ways it sounds too good to be true. You fill out some paperwork, you save an additional 10% on your, and what does that mean for Yorkville? If you could get everything subscribed you have today, it's about 50 grand a year. Mm-hmm. Yep. And again, there's no capital investment. It's really filling out paperwork and you start saving money.
Just to confirm or to clarify, this is not residential electric aggregation or anything having to do with other people's accounts. These would be city accounts. So bills that we pay for electricity.
Yeah,
as an organization.
So it's not everybody else is not getting 10%.
Correct.
Your individual residents can sign up on their own and get 10%, but you have to do it one by one. There's no aggregation mechanism for community.
Better if it never ties.
Not by us. Yeah, we weren't really aware of it. None of the other solar farms that we've already permitted brought it us to our attention. So if we have another one in front of us, certainly we would say we would like, I don't know if we can set it aside necessarily for Yorkville residents, but
well,
we would try to make sure they were aware of it.
You can ask I know you can do because the City of Roar did this.
Okay.
City of Roar asked it to be a community-driven solar field. I don't know if you can force it, but you can ask.
Sure.
And the solar developer agreed to do. And what is a community-driven solar field? It means whoever is developing it is trying to dedicate that usage to residents and businesses and governmental units inside the City of Yorkville.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's a good deal. And the reason it's a good deal is, again, because everybody's paying into this fund. It's really not free money. It's basically captioning money that the city's already paying into these funds.
Could you foresee the future, though, changing on this with the climate?
Well, the 30% tax credit is scheduled to, it's in law right now to go away at the end of 27. So, you know, I don't want to sound used car salesman like, you should do it now because it might not exist after 27. But there's a lot of rush, and you guys will see in your own city, there'll be a lot of push to get the fields on paper in production by 2027. Because if you're not, you have to be done by December of 27. If you're not done, you lose 30% tax credit, which ruins the economics quite a bit. So there'll be a big push to get a lot of these fields developed between today and the end of 27. And then my gut feeling is there's not going to be a lot of fields developed for a couple of years.
Chris, Matt, you have any questions?
No, not in this specifically, but to kind of part Ken's point, the reason I figured out about Nexam Solar, which I asked at the last meeting when Marty was there, mm-hmm. is that you can essentially apply to get part of the solar field. The reason I figured that out is I had a resident ask, like, point blank, like, this isn't going into the data center. So I'm like, no, it's not. Here's the company, and by the way, did you know that you can actually apply, right? So I kind of found them on the back door because they've never mentioned it in the meeting whatsoever.
Yeah.
So
you get this, like, that would have been a good sell.
Me? No, I have solar in my house, so yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, the specific resident was like, hey, by the way, you know, try and take advantage. You might as well get it now, you know, that you're aware of it. So I sent them the page to apply and everything. So, and I guess we could try and do that. Say it's not a guarantee, it's not reserved for us, but it's worth a shot, right? So.
You can, I have solar in my house too. You can do both.
Yeah.
Unless your solar is overproducing. There's quite a few home solars that actually use up basically 100%.
Yeah.
I'm not at 100%, I'm about 75%. But yeah, you can be, and you know, if you look at this bill, you can see right on top, and I'm sure your bill, if you look in detail,
yeah.
you can see the kilowatt hours sent to the grid and kilowatt hours that came from the grid. But you can do both. But if your home solar is producing 100%, you can always sign up to what you use. You know, if it was unlimited, I'd sign up for 10 million kilowatt hours.
Well, that's why they sweep it every October or April, comment.
Yeah, you've got a choice. You can sweep it in October or April. I don't have to worry about that because what we're talking about, if you produce more than you use, they'll cash you out either in October or April, and you have to make a decision on when you want to get cashed out if your home solar is overproducing.
That's gone now, though, isn't it?
No, it depends. Let me clarify. If you're on the original home solar program, it's not gone. They did change the program starting January 1st of this year, and I call the old program true net metering. The new program is kind of like a modified net, and you're right. If you put in a solar system starting in January of 25, you lost that ability.
Right.
But they grandfathered the old ones in, at least for now.
Maybe a bit off topic, I don't know, Barney, if you knew this. Is that because ComEd got to their 25% threshold that the state was requiring earlier than anticipated, do you know? Because was it by the end of this year they were supposed to get to 25% renewable?
Yeah, and they're nowhere close to that. Actually, the trigger was 5%. Once ComEd, and it wasn't low, once 5% of their residential base had solar, then the true net metering went away, okay. And they went to this modified. And there is actually good reasons for that, because the people with solar on their roof are really being subsidized by everybody else. So that's, and they were, you know, the incentive was out there to get solar going, but then there's a point where, you know, the subsidy's got to get tailed back or end up, because, you know, this isn't money coming from God, it's coming from all of us. Yeah, but we're not going to make the 2030, and some of that has to do with the power demand has gone way up, as you guys know, in the last 3 years.
A little bit off topic, but that's all I got. Thank you. All right,
thank you for the presentation. Barry, you want to just start from the top then?
Or? Yeah, that'd be fun.
Thank you.
Awesome, thank you.
Do you want these back?
No.
You can skip the minutes, unless if anybody has any changes. So we'll bring those back next month.
All right, sounds good. And we'll just go with ADM 2025-35 budget reports for August and September 2025.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions, we can take them right off the top. Sales taxes have continued to trend, you know, double-digit increases. The one that just got posted last week, which is not in this report, for October was almost a record. It's like $535,000. It's up 24% year over year. You know, we're losing about 20 or 30 grand a month on use taxes due to the reclassification of some online sales taxes on January 1st. But we apparently are gaining, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 or more. So things are still looking pretty rosy on sales taxes for like the sixth year in a row or something like that. So, and hopefully that won't change in the next month when we have cost of opening. So.
Does anyone have any questions?
Nope.
You good?
Cool. We'll move on right along to item number two, ADM 2025-36, Treasurer's Report for August and September of 2025.
Okay, for the month ended August 31st, 2025, unaudited beginning fund balance is $70,261,801. Year-to-date revenues of $22,681,576. Year-to-date expenses of $23,349,873 for projected ending fund balance of $69,593,504. For the month ended September 30th, 2025, unaudited beginning fund balance of $70,261,801. Year-to-date revenues of $29,436,455. Year-to-date expenses of $36,536,372. For projected ending fund balance of $63,161,885.
Thank you, Rob. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any questions on that?
Nope.
All right. We'll go with ADM 2025-37 cash statements for May through August. Goodness.
These are informational, as always. Cash balances on the first page and our investment balances on the second.
Anyone have any questions on that one?
I do not.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, cool. Move on to the next item. We got ADM 2025-38, review of invoices between $5,000 and $25,000.
And this is informational, as always. These have already been previously approved by City Council. We have one from the second meeting in August, two from the meeting in September, and then one from last night's meeting.
All right. Any questions on that one, guys?
Nope.
Yeah, I'm good.
Nope. Awesome. All right. ADM 2025-39, 39, website reports for August and September of 2025.
This is an informational item. The reports are in the packet. We hit our peak in August for website visits and for our social media push for Hometown Days. We will see a drop down through January, and then we pick up again once we start having more events throughout the annual year. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Hearing no questions, I think we can move on. ADM 2025-40 Annual Treasurer's Report.
So the annual treasurer's report, as always, starts off with a summary statement of operations showing fund balance or net position for the city's major funds, and then we group the minor funds together by category, revenues, expenditures, the transfers, along with the ending fund balance or net position. Right below the chart, I have it highlighted right now, but we will have a link to the annual comprehensive financial report, which is going to be out probably by the end of next week. So by when this does get published, obviously I'll be sure to include that link. And then after that, we just list all the receipts by fund that we received in fiscal year 2025. After that, it's payroll, which lists everybody who's on the city's payroll in $25,000 increments from zero all the way up to $125,000 and above. And then we list all our vendors that we disbursed more than $2,500 to over the course of the fiscal year. And again, this will be presented at the October 28th meeting, and then will be published in the local paper pursuant to state statute.
Thank you, Rob. Does anyone have any questions on this?
Nope, I'm
good. Nope. All right. So we'll go to item number 8, ADM 2025-42. Project cost summary and report update for the Lake Michigan Water Sourcing Project and Public Works and Parks Department facility.
On the Lake Michigan water reports, the numbers in there do reflect the latest worst case scenario estimates from DuPage Water Commission. And just as a reminder, our next checkpoint on those prices are going to be on Halloween. When they're going to be opening two, pretty good sized bid packages. So hopefully those will come in, at engineer's estimate or under, and we can kind of claw back some of our planned increases there. The public works report, the October one, which is PDF page 316 in the packet, Rob included a nice little contingency category analysis in the bottom left of the report. So we've listed out construction contingency, what we budgeted and what we used. Construction contingency is, things that happen in the field, something got missed, change of plans, just something unexpected. Owner's contingency would be items that were not missed in the plan per se, but we've, made a conscious decision to change. There is one that's going to be on there under owner's contingency for about another $34,000, which will come in front of you at probably the next city council meeting for just review, because we've authorized it. In general, instead of trucking spoils off-site or giving them away, which we were hoping to do, we ended up creating a berm on-site. So some additional visual and audio screening for the neighbors there, for the back end of the yard. And so we had to authorize the contractor to do that. Tried to give away all of our clay and dirt and didn't work out with some of the construction projects in town. So that's fine. And then the $23,000 that's in there, Eric's office did not have a window despite the fact that it had two exterior walls on it. So we looked at that and said that probably was an oversight, so we decided to authorize that one. And the risk reserve is tariffs. So we did have, I think that's entirely within one tariff, $12,000 for some elevator parts, so that were unavoidable. And so I think I owe you an updated contingency authorization report at City Council, so that'll be the next meeting. And I'm happy to answer any other questions that you have.
Does Eric actually need a window?
Right.
Can we get him a mirror?
Right.
I know. I'm telling you.
that's you know, an endless mirror. Yeah.
That's your twin.
Fortunately, that's not on the official record. I'll make that joke.
Sure.
Anyone else have any other questions or comments?
Nope.
I'm good. All right. Well, then let's go with ADM 2025-43, ordinance authorizing the third amendment to the annual budget of the United City of Yorkville for the fiscal year commencing on May 1st, 2025 and ending on April 30th, 2026.
So this is kind of carryover from last fiscal year, as you may recall. Right before the new administration took office, we approved a special census. We paid them just under $900,000. A new administration came in, federal workforce was put on furlough, so the special census was deferred. So just pursuant to GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, I had to book that as a prepaid, $899,000. So it was a prepaid expense at the end of fiscal year 2025, and now we're just going through the process of reallocating it for FY26. As you also know, the special census, again, has been postponed under the government shutdown. Hopefully we can get that done in FY26, but if not, you'll be seeing another budget amendment come through in FY27, but hopefully that won't be the case.
So you're just pushing it back out?
Correct, yeah, just reappropriating the money.
So let's say it happens to go into the next fiscal year. You'll show an overage in this year and then it'll be sucked out next year.
Well, it would just stay on the balance sheet as a prepaid. It just won't be recognized as an expense until we actually do it.
Okay, so.
With the, I guess, the continued, the prepaid status and the continued pushing, is there a possibility that the cost will go up or we locked into?
We paid it.
Right.
Yeah, we gotta paid it.
It's paid in full, so yeah.
Yeah. Should, I mean, I guess anything is possible these days, but yeah.
Subject to tariffs.
Chris, did you have anything to add?
No, I'm good, thanks.
All right. Go with ADM 2025-44, fiscal year end of 25, unaudited budget report.
We'll save you the entire audit presentation, which you're going to hear in 2 weeks anyway. But yeah, another good year. General fund, was good on the revenue side by almost $1 million. Expenditure side, like $1.8 million to the good. Some of that is deferred projects, special census, etc. But it's kind of just normal conservative budgeting practices, which we've done, each year for the past several years. So we did end up with $1 million surplus in the general fund, and that is capitalized with $1 million transfer to the capital fund. So we had really a functional $2 million surplus at the end of the year, and so we set aside $1 million of that for Lake Michigan or the Public Works facility or any of our road projects that are upcoming. Water department also was generally good. The increases that we put in place last year met what we had budgeted for, so that is pretty good going into this upcoming year. And then the sewer project had a bunch of project capital deferrals, so that's well too. All the departments were under budget, and so your presentation in 2 weeks we'll get into those in detail.
Anyone have any comments or thoughts on that one?
No.
So item number 12, ADM 2025-46, meeting schedule for 2026.
You have no holiday conflicts on the third Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. for 2026. So with next month's meeting permission, we'll publish that calendar, unless you guys want to change the date and time.
I'm good with it. Everyone else?
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
It worked.
All right, great. Which brings us to our final item, ADM 2025-47, request for proposals, employee benefits consulting services.
Yeah, Rob's got a nice memo in the packet along with the RFP document. We last went out to RFP for health insurance brokerage services probably 10 years ago or so. Used similar RFP, did interviews with like five different firms, recommended Alliant, it was Mesereau at the time, so it's our current brokerage team. And we told you when we renewed our health insurance back in March or April that we would do this just as a way to check the market and make sure that we are getting the best brokerage services that we can in an attempt to kind of hedge some of the cost increases we had in the last year. We will be asking our current broker to apply and to submit a proposal. I would expect that we would end up interviewing them as well, and we'll see what the field brings to us at a later date. This is an informational item because there's no commitment to be made. It's just staff time. We'll let you know that there will be, potentially a brokerage change or a recommendation at a future meeting, and just wanted you all to be aware of it.
Does anyone have any questions about this?
Nope.
Is there any additional business?
No.
Yep, we're good.
Nope. All right, well, I have nothing else to add, so I think this brings our unofficial meeting to a close.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thanks, Rob.